It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
It's Laurie and John. Good
That's
morning.
That's right.
Good morning.
I knew
John
that was
Laurie.
Coming.
Laurie and John.
Thank you, Hezzy, for that.
Good morning, Hezzy.
So you're a prognosticator. You know, you're more than just a regular, automobile reviewer. You're a prognosticator, too. I hope people understand that term. It's not a dirty word.
I think it means,
so do I.
I think it means your nose grows when you talk or something.
No, it does not. But here we are.
And I tend to agree with Johnny.
That's a
My
terrible
apologies.
Vision. That's a terrible, terrible mental picture.
Wait, I have to push back from the computer screen. I'm hitting it already. So.
Well, and on that happy note, here we are on a actually cloudy day in Pinehurst. It's been very warm.
Yeah.
It's another beautiful day in Pinehurst.
And we've had some, at night especially, we're having some really loud thunder and lightning storms, but summer's nearly over. It's hard
and
to
rain.
Believe. Yep, and rain. Summer's nearly over. And it's interesting that, and this always happens, in the summertime we get an onslaught of convertibles to drive. And, in the old days, 34 years ago when I first started this gig of reviewing cars, you get a convertible and you go out on the open road and you take a great drive and let the wind rustle through your hair. These days when Johnny and I, this summer especially, when we would go out on the open road, which means basically to the grocery store and back and sometimes through downtown Pinehurst at 25 miles an hour, we would always have – we actually did take a long road trip in the fabulous BMW sports –
850.
Oh, gosh, what a gorgeous – we'll talk about that in a future program. And we had the top down for, I think, 42 minutes because then the sun got hot. And, of course, Johnny's thick, luxurious hair is no longer black and no longer thick and luxurious on top.
My head was burning.
So the top went back up. And so the way that we approached these wonderful convertibles that we had throughout the summer was a whole lot different than three decades ago, when we didn't care if we got sunburned, and we didn't care if
when we didn't go to the skin doctor all the time to remove moles
and Johnny, when you didn't have so much hair to get ruffled in the wind.
Yeah.
So, but nonetheless, Johnny's going to take the wheel, pardon the pun, on today's review, simply because, and I was just saying to Hezzy, the Mazda Miata for me was like trying to get back in a size 8 dress.
I'm not going to talk about that.
No, we won't talk about dress sizes.
But for me, getting back into a size 8 dress was not realistic, was not a happy thought, because it would get me depressed that I no longer am. And what I would have to do in order to get into one would be a tremendous physical taxation
it's hard for me to keep quiet on this.
I know. You better keep quiet on these things. You absolutely better just not say a word or else. But the thing is, I feel the same way about getting into the Miata was like trying to get into a dress that I wore, 30 years ago. And for that reason, and really that reason, a beautiful little car, Johnny loved it, and has a history with it, and a friend who is a real Miata fan and has had them for years. I just did not feel that it was, and it was a straight shift. I just didn't feel that it was my kind of drive. Not that it wasn't a wonderful car, and Johnny's going to now tell you how wonderful it really was. Take it away, honey.
Wow, what an introduction!
All right,
yeah,
John.
I'm gonna talk. I want to talk live to any of the car listeners who are men, and what I want to talk about is my wife. Well, we had someone who took care of our yard, and we decided since our grandson was living with us that we'd use him to take care of these kinds of things and save me considerable money each month. And you can guess how that's worked out. not well. But Lori wanted to get a push mower. Now, I'm not talking about an electric. I'm not talking about a gasoline-powered push mower. I'm talking about a push mower, the kind where the blades are exposed and you push it with your own power, and it's meant to cut.
A nostalgic lawnmower. The lawnmower of our youth, Johnny, when we would not have to worry about whether or not we could start the engine. We just pushed it and the blades ran. And this is a wonderful one because it's got a little bagger that collects all the grass. Go ahead, honey.
Oh, that's
and Lori
that's
wanted
really cool.
Lori wanted to get one of these. Yeah, she wanted to get one of these so that she could get some exercise. We don't have much of a yard, truthfully. Our yard, both the front and the backyard, is about the size of our living room. Truthfully, it's not.
Well, wait. We have an acre of land, but in Pinehurst, because of the pine trees.
Keyword is pine.
Yeah, the pine.
Pine straw.
Pine needles create acid in the soil and prevent most types of grass from growing.
Not the weeds, but
but the grass. And so here in Pinehurst, even though we have an acre of land, most of our land is covered with pine straw, which is what we do here because it covers the sandy, you know, ground. We don't have even dirt here. We're in the sandhills, and it's. You know, it's
hard to grow grass.
It's very hard. And so when you have a lawn, it cannot be underneath a pine tree per se because of the acidic soil that, you know, the acid of the pine needles as they drop on. So our green grass area is small. Our
mostly moss, really.
Well, yes. And but the house itself is on an acre. Okay, go
ahead.
Well,
that isn't the point. The point is my wife wanted to push more. So I got her one. Hmm. Now, I got it, came in a box, I assembled it, I told her about it, and I've mowed both the front yard and the backyard myself, told her that it needs to be mowed every 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
She hasn't yet had her hands on this lawnmower. So it's just one of those things.
I look forward to it.
She wanted it for you, John. She really wanted it for you. That's
becoming painfully obvious. Has he? Oh, well, that's a segue on wheels to get me into sports cars.
Right.
We had a Mazda Miata, and I am going to talk about it. It's a super neat little car. I have to go back to the history of sports cars a little bit. I think most guys are sort of fascinated with sports cars. I always was. And if anyone read the article that I wrote for you about sports cars, about this car for the Yonkers Tribune, a good friend of mine, Joey Jackson, who I grew up with, and it was a rare thing because Joey and I were the same age and we were best friends, and Joey's older brother was the same age as my older brother, and they were best friends. And Joey had originally had a Triumph Spitfire when we were in high school. Now, you can imagine who the coolest kid in the in the whole class was, you know, he had a Spitfire. But his brother had an MG. He had an MGB, actually. And both of them were pretty good at tinkering with cars and that kind of thing. His brother, Joey's brother, Sidney, who had the MGB, was fairly handy. My brother was very handy. And they built a hard top for the MGB that was made out of fiberglass. And fitted to it and everything.
Wow.
And so have a long standing because, good gosh, that was, if you graduate from high school, let's say when you're 15, that would have been 55 years ago. So somewhere in that neighborhood. Anyway, Joey then in, I believe it was 1989, was the first year that the Mazda Miata, it was called then, now it's just called the Mazda MX-5. But the Mazda Miata came out, and Joey was one of the first people to have the Mazda Miata in our part of the world, Bristol, Tennessee. And I think I'm telling you the truth. I've talked to Joey not too long ago, and he still owns that original Miata, which he now keeps. Yeah, he keeps it covered, and I think on blocks and that kind of thing. Keeps it up. But he's had a new Miata every few years since then. And was still driving one when he came to see me, I don't know, four or five years ago, he had one. So he still drives them all the time, and he's my age. So course, he's slightly thinner. Actually, he's a lot thinner, and very able to get in and out of the vehicle. Actually, sports cars, getting into a sports car is not very difficult. You can drop into a sports car. It's the getting out of the sports car that usually presents much more of a problem. But I own sports cars, too, from a personal standpoint. I owned an S2000. Honda made, for 9 years, I think it was, 1999 to 2009, they made the S2000, which was a two-seater sports car, and a wonderful, I thought, representation of what a sports car should be and should be like. And I had one of those for a couple of years and enjoyed it very much. I was in my 50s probably when I owned it. So, again, a little low to the ground, a little rough on the old backside and back and that kind of thing, and eventually sold it to a family member who still has it. So, but they're wonderful cars. Most all these cars are wonderful cars. They do last if you take care of them. And, of course, the newer ones, like this one, the MX-5, this was a 2019 MX-5, and it's called a soft top. Not only has the sports car tradition to it, but they now have the features, they have many more of the features from a safety standpoint that we look for in vehicles. And, of course, if you're ever going to be in an accident, being in an accident in a sports car has probably put you at a disadvantage. So it's important, I think, it's just like having a motorcycle. You need to look at all the aspects of owning a vehicle like this. But it was lovely. It was lovely. It was it's a 2019 Mazda MX-5. Oh, before I get away from Hondas, they're coming out with a 2019 S2000. They're just redoing it. It doesn't look anything like the old S2000s, not really. It is a two-seater sports car, and it starts at $50,000, but I'll tell you something. But that was just announced not too long ago. Anyway, back to the Mazda. They've been making them a long time. They're very good at what they do. It had six-speed on the column, and it looks like a James Bond-type car. But love the styling of it. Of course, very European-looking. Very appealing, I think, to young people or to middle-aged people even. And it's probably appealing to older people as long as you are youthful and active so that you can get in and out of the car. Like I said, I didn't have a problem getting into it. But getting out of it was a little bit more of a spectacle. It's like, where do you put your hand to get some help in pulling yourself in one direction or the other? And you can't grab hold of the soft top. You grab hold of next to the window, next to the windshield. You can grab hold of the brace there and pull yourself. Can't really pull on the door because you're trying to get out of that. So it can be kind of entertaining. And then once you get your feet one foot out, it's getting the other foot out. You know, that's because you just don't bend like you did when you were 25. I mean, that's reality. But wonderful car. Really, really enjoyed it. It's interesting because it talks about a lot of things that if you are a car person, this would be probably easily understandable. But if you're a person who just likes sports cars and wants to, and you read this, you really have to understand what it is that they are saying with their various terminologies. And it's a four-cylinder, okay? It's 181 horsepower out of four cylinders. Really good. And it says it has a four-cylinder Sky Active, all caps, ACTIV, Sky Active G engine with VVT. Well, I don't know what that means. Do you know what that means, Hezzy?
No idea.
Yeah. So I went and looked all these things up because I figured, well, I need to know what this kind of thing is because I like it, so I at least understand something about it. And the Sky Active G engine is a new generation, okay, so that'd be 2019, highly efficient direct injection gasoline engine. And it achieves the highest gasoline engine compression ratio, which means you have more power. And this is because it achieves significantly improved engine efficiency thanks to high compression combustion. So you get more fuel efficiency and more torque. That's what's going to propel you forward. Our manual transmission gets 43 miles per gallon at 26 around town for an average
that's
of 29
huge.
Miles per gallon. Yeah, and it is. It's like a little pocket rocket, I mean, if that's what you want it to be. But you figure when you get out on the interstate in a car that's aerodynamically designed, not particularly heavy, and you get it up to 70 miles an hour, let's say, long, flat, straight spaces, and you're in sixth gear, which is your best gear ratios for fuel consumption, it's no wonder you can get really good gas mileage out of it. So it's a cool little car. And listen, it rides 100% better than the ones they built in 2000 even, that kind of thing. And let's see, there was a bunch of other things on here that I just, if you're going to look at a sports car, you ought to know these kinds of things. It's a four-cylinder, I said, 181 horsepower. It's got a SkyActiv MT 6-speed manual transmission. It also comes in automatic if you want it, which I would if it were me, of course. Basically, the transmission allows you to shift more easily because it has a shorter stroke. You remember the old, like, GTs, or which my brother had, or some of the other. You remember you had a long, when you went from first to second, there was a pretty good distance from top to back. And they've shortened all that to make it easy to shift. One of the things that was always a problem for me after I got to be an adult was I tore up my knee, my left knee, playing volleyball and intramural sports and stuff. And they could operate on it, or they told me just to stop playing. Well, I stopped playing, of course. But over the years, it really continues to be bothersome. And doing things like pushing in a clutch multiple times, or holding the clutch in while you're, you know, at a stop light or stop sign or whatever, but holding it, those kind of things wear on my knee after a period of time. So automatics are always my choice. But for the young person who likes control of the RPMs, it's a perfect thing. Let's see. It's got a sport-tuned exhaust system, all those kinds of things. They have a lot of active other things. Active Sense package. The Active Sense package is new for 2019, and it's all of the advanced safety technologies which make use of detection devices, such as radar and cameras. They have an active safety technology that supports safe driving by helping the driver to recognize potential hazards. Pre-crash safety technology helps to avert collisions or reduce their severity in situations where they cannot be avoided. A lot of that, too, has to do with, because I know Mazda was one of those, that in a crash, I believe that it's set so that the engine drops below the frame, so it's not pushed back into the where the driver is. You actually are pushed under.
Right.
So that kind of thing. I think those are wonderful things. Now you can recognize, it's recognizing, it's monitoring what's going on ahead of you. Anything that helps keep you out of an accident is a good thing.
Let me interrupt you here a minute, honey. Who's going to buy this car? All right, here in Pinehurst, North Carolina, the person that's going to buy this car is probably either an older person who's retired, who wants to bebop around and doesn't play golf because there's nowhere you could possibly put your golf clubs in this car.
Well, you could, but you might have to leave the trunk up.
Probably. And no, this is not a car for – this is not a family car, absolutely not. One thing I can say – I did drive the car. One thing I can say, of all the convertibles that I've driven, this is the one that made me feel like I was in an airplane cockpit. And, yes, I've been in an airplane cockpit a couple of times. But the fact of the matter is you're very low to the ground. You really feel like you're, kind of flying. With the top down, you feel like you are at one with the road, so to speak. So who's going to buy this car in Pinehurst? An older individual.
Or somebody in their 30s is up and coming.
But that's not what Pinehurst is about. Now, who's going to buy this?
What about the golfers? There are a lot of golfers who are in their 30s and 40s.
But they're visitors. They're not residents.
Well, but they probably would buy one.
Well, I'm sure they would, but I'm talking about living in Pinehurst. Okay, now, who's going to buy this car in metropolitan New York and Yonkers? Somebody who doesn't mind taking their life in their hands, because, frankly, I wouldn't drive this car on the Long Island Expressway if you paid me, let alone FDR Drive. Now, however, if I lived in Manhattan...
Easy to park.
Yeah, very easy to park. You can park it on the sidewalk. But here's the thing. If I lived in Manhattan, I had a house out on the island. If I had a house in the Hamptons or something of that nature, that's the car I would leave in the garage out there, because it would be delightful, an absolutely delightful vehicle, especially in a congested summer area like Cape Cod, the Hamptons, anything of that nature. It's not, obviously, it's not a winter drive. You're not going to drive this car in the snow. But if you have the opportunity or the option or the availability to have a second car that you can use in this time of year, in the summertime, in the early fall, in the late spring, keep it garaged. This is a car you want a garage because of the soft top, and enjoy, being at one with nature and enjoy small road driving. It's not a race car, in my estimation. I'm sure it was designed for that purpose at one point or another, but it's a delightful drive. And the person that would drive it, I think, would be somebody who's looking for a second car to enjoy, but obviously not like a car that would be.
Isn't it also priced accordingly, so that especially if you have a regular car, this is a very affordable car to have.
Very affordable.
Yeah, this starts at $25,000.
Yeah, it's a great option.
You're kidding.
A great option is a second car. No,
it starts at $25,000.
Yeah.
The one thing, the other thing, when we were talking about the ride, which, if you remember the old sports cars, and I rode including the Corvette, and I was telling you about my buddy Joey and his brother Sidney, and Sidney had an MGB, and then he bought a Corvette. He had one of the first Corvette Stingrays. So, and I remember riding in those cars, all of those cars. And if you remember back then, the advertising for it was you could feel the road. Well, what you felt were all the bumps and all the potholes and all the everything that was there. You were going to feel it when you were driving or riding in one of those sports cars. The Corvette, of course, was better because it was heavier, but it's still, there was a lot. And, of course, technology back then, that was the latest technology is what you were dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you get in this car, and I drove this car quite a bit, but you get in this car, and I'm not telling you that it's absolutely like riding in a Cadillac. That would be ridiculous. But they have really smoothed it out. The suspension and the way they've got it set up is very pleasant to drive. It is not tiring. It doesn't beat you up when you're driving. And that makes it really enjoyable. And I think if it had an automatic, if it were a vehicle that I was going to purchase, and I would like something like this, to be honest with you, but I would get an automatic, and I'd be very happy with it. It's like Lori said, it's not for a family. But for me personally, to run over to the supermarket, to run over to DeWitt's where I shoot sporting clays on occasion, which is about a 20-minute, 30-minute drive through the country, it would be perfect for that kind of thing. A few turns, a few stop signs, some really smooth roads, some pretty good curves. It would be an absolutely joy to drive something like that. On those kinds of roads, and I would enjoy it. I think there's value in enjoying driving, and I think that's one of this is one of those cars that would do that.
In the very early days of cars, you would go on the parkway on a Sunday afternoon and take a drive. That was a leisure way to spend a Sunday afternoon. This car is a way to spend your invaluable leisure time. And to really just kind of say to life, okay, I'm going to take a bit of a break, get out there, put the top down, and enjoy the sun, go and get a bushel of clams and stick it in the trunk and bring it home, in the Hamptons or whatever. Just enjoy life. It's a car for that purpose.
Do you remember, and I think we talked about this when we did the Corvette, do you remember that, what is that?
I don't know.
It must be on.
We got a little bit of noise. They're doing construction outside the building.
God bless New York.
They're redoing the parking lot.
Okay, at least it's not my phone system. But we talked about Route 66, the television show. Do you remember what that really did for sports car sales? People didn't really grasp. I mean, this is early. The communications that we have today were a foreign concept in 1966. But that show introduced the Corvette. I mean, it really introduced the Corvette. And it helped create what Corvette became. So many of the sports cars these days, the Honda S2000 being one, people loved it and it was popular. But what have you seen in marketing and advertising to really push those cars? Or the Miata, or, I mean, the MX-5, the Mazda MX-5. What really have you seen that really pushes sales of those cars? I don't recall seeing a whole lot.
You know,
they have a very loyal, probably, base group, but I don't see them expanding.
But you know why? Because it's not stop and think a minute. This is a regionally popular car. In other words, we talk about the East Coast. Okay, fine. California.
Yeah.
In California, on the freeways and stuff like that, they're driving convertibles. Yeah. They're driving all these incredible cars, topless cars, without a care in the world, because California has something in the air that makes you feel like, you know, you are, you know, I don't even know how to put it, but
dying of smog is what came.
No, but you know, you've got the sunshine, you've got the soft breezes, you have the feeling of the outdoors, even in the city. And so, you know, yes, in California, in the city,
the weather, sure.
Yeah, you know, you're going to drive a car like this. Absolutely. Are you going to drive this car in northern New England? I don't think so. Even in the summer, it's not a car that's
going
to go.
Portland, where it's
rain. Exactly. It's not going to be conducive to up and down mountains. No, it's not. You want beautiful weather, beautiful open roads. Is it going to be great in the Southwest? I'm sure it will. But it's a regional car. It's not something I think you would see much of in Chicago or in Michigan. I think that you're going to see it where the weather is warm and the sun is out and the rain is sparse. And, you know, and you've got an opportunity to buy a second car. I don't see this as a first car in any family or any individual. So I don't know why they would do a national advertising program when they have probably areas of regional sales that they're
promoting those regions.
Promoting and through their
yeah.
dealers.
Yeah. Probably a lot of advertising
yeah, was
saying
it,
Dallas.
When the Miata came out, though, it had such unbelievable there was so much chatter in a very positive way. People loved it. And it was such an exciting ride.
It
was something unique.
It really looked like a sports car. I mean, it looked like a sports car. It still does. It looks like,
yeah,
I mean, when you envision a sports car, this is one of those things that comes into your mind.
And the price point. You could afford it.
Yeah.
It wasn't an $85,000 sports car.
Sure.
You know, and yes.
Who made the 300, the something 300?
Chrysler.
No. It was a sports car, something 300. But it was another one.
I don't remember that.
It didn't last that long, but it really looked like a sports car. But Mazda
isn't also,
found a way.
A car you would get your kid, you know, a college kid?
No. Insurance. No, the insurance
no.
on this.
No,
insurance
no.
is too high. Okay.
You got to be a seasoned driver. I remember, you know, I come from a family of four, and I remember when we were all, you know, finally in school and all that, Dad bought himself an MG. You know, it sat two people, him
right.
and somebody else. You got four kids and a wife. You know, you can't take the family on a road trip.
He's trying to say something.
But he drove it because he enjoyed it. He you know, my family put on an annual road rally, loved to drive. Dad could drive in his sleep. He could drive underneath trucks. I mean, he was a tremendous driver.
He did that a couple times when he was asleep, driving under the truck.
But, you know, the fact is he enjoyed driving, and so he bought a car that he could enjoy driving. This is what the Mazda Miata is. You want to buy a car that you're going to enjoy driving,
yeah,
and you have a place to
true.
Drive and time in your life to drive it, and not as a commuter car, certainly not as a family car, but as a car that's going to give you pure enjoyment and not break the bank. The Mazda Miata, the MX-5.
Yeah. Well, when I drove the most recent one we had, that was a two-seater with the top down, of course, I wore a ball cap. And I remember the old sports cars, and you probably do too, Hezzy, but a lot of times when you got in them, you couldn't wear a ball cap. You couldn't wear a hat because it would blow off.
No, you couldn't.
You know, the aerodynamics were such that the windshield was low enough that the air coming over was really right at the top of your head. So it was very hard to keep anything on your head. But, you know, they fixed all that.
So anyway, I'm gonna wrap us up, honey, because I know that Ezzy has another delightful guest.
Right.
Thank you, honey, for wrapping us up.
Yeah, no, but I do want to watch the clock on this because I know that there's another guest in the wings. But but here's the point: full marks for what this car is.
Yep.
You know, a tremendous drive, responsive.
Yep.
But next week, I would like us to see how this week progresses because yesterday the stock market really took a hit. Germany's teetering, China's teetering. How is this affecting car production and manufacturing?
Argentina's market went down 50%.
What are we looking at here? I mean, these are countries, including Argentina, where there's a lot on the line for car manufacturers. So how is this going to impact us in the future, especially the production of new cars and all these various models that we're seeing, 8, 9 different models for each car coming off of the the manufacturing plants. What does this mean for us?
Okay.
Let's keep an eye open this next week and see what's going to happen to the automotive world as
we look
at the verge of a worldwide recession.
All right.
And on that happy note,
so
have a great week.
What a pleasant day.
Thanks, Eddie.
I loved it.
Enjoyed it.
Thanks for the ride, John. And you too, Lori.
Bye-bye.
Don't worry about that number 8 dress. Don't worry about it.
And by the way, you'll just hear me next week because Johnny's off to Argentina.
Okay.
So
it'll just be
you and me next week, Hezzy.
Only to check
what
on the
pleasure.
Economy.
Be well.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take
now.
Care. Goodbye. Oh, how exciting. That is really exciting. All right, let's see if we can get a hold of Karen. She's our next guest. Hello, is this Karen? This is Hezzy calling from Yonkers. How are you?
Good, Hezzy. How are you?
Okay, I'm so excited
to
speak to you. I love your double-barreled name, or triple-barreled name. You know, Karen Sokolov-Javits, really terrific. So you fit in right into the political milieu. I guess your hashtag KSJ, is that it? That's very, very clever. Well, the reason I was introduced to you, actually, when I learned about your outreach effort to your grandchildren, particularly with music. And I didn't realize you also have, like, evidently, even though you're a singer and a songwriter and a radio host on top of that, you're also almost a scientist, you know, trying to get out. So how did you discover this capacity of using your CDs and opening up the minds and hearts of your children and grandchildren?
Well, you know, everyone loves music, right? So my kids are growing up, and I write these songs on the piano, and then all of a sudden they'd start singing them. And, I bring kids into the recording studio. I just love that. That's a thrill for me and for them, you know. It just comes naturally, you know, in my head to hear all these songs. And then I record them. But I love, you know, I'm into good health. I'm into children. I have a Jewish album, too, Hezzy. all sorts
helps.
Of songs. Yeah, right. How do you like that?
How did you get into music? How did you get into music in the first place?
It's funny. My mom and dad were very musical. My dad was kind of an entertainer. And I took piano for years and years, and I sang and tap danced. And, you know, I knew I could write songs, but I had no reason. You know, I wasn't going to go around the country singing them. I had little kids at the time. But a friend of mine, he gave me a musical he had written. It was called Love at the Cafe. And he didn't have the songs. He had the script, but 17 blanks for the songs. And I said, Jim, can I try, you know, to write these songs? Because I knew I could do it. So the first one was called Kissing in Multiples. And I wrote, why do I want to kiss in multiples? Boy A, boy B, boy C, D, E, F, and G. And then it just, you know, like a faucet turning on, it just went on. And it's still, I have so many songs in my head. Sometimes I stop myself from writing them down, you know.
Well,
it's wonderful,
I love
it.
It's got to be very exciting because it actually expands your creative capacity And you must have a very creative mind, because I was like, I couldn't believe how much you've accomplished. You wrote 33 songs just on the Princess Diana and Prince Charles, you know, marriage.
Yeah.
And I got to know about that because it was recently the 38th anniversary of that marriage, and eventually the dissolution.
Right.
But was she captivated you as well? I mean, everybody was captivated by Princess Diana.
Totally. Wasn't she incredible? It was her love for other people. It was her compassion that drew me to her. And then, you know, when at 36 years old, she dies in a car crash. And who knows if it was really a car crash, you know, and not a conspiracy. Nobody really knows. You know, everyone was drawn to her. She's so unique. There's nobody like her, really. And now her two sons are carrying on her legacy.
Right.
It just still hurts. It hurts all of us that she's gone, you know, because she gave us so much. She's kind of like a mother. Yes. Do you remember where you were when she died?
I don't remember specifically, but I remember being glued to the television as the reports just came out. It was flooding. It was almost impossible to avoid, and not that I wanted to avoid it, I was captivated. And it got worse and worse as we heard more and more. And the tragedy and the love relationship that she had, it was gut-wrenching. And yet she was I guess I don't know what the English word is, but she was empathic. She was very empathic with people, and it showed. And her work, you know, was interesting. When she went abroad, she was concerned about saving people's lives. There were grenades in so many different parts of the world.
I know, the landmines,
The landmines, that was one of her things. Amazing.
Yeah, and what about AIDS? The first, you know, the first famous person to shake hands, you know, with a man who had AIDS.
Right.
That just opened the world up. Nobody else had done that.
Absolutely. Nobody.
Yeah, she was incredible.
I don't know where she
incredible.
Found that strength, but she did. And she was very naive, wasn't she, at 19 when she eventually would come to marry the prince? Very young woman.
Yes.
And yet very,
very young and inexperienced,
she was naive.
You know.
That's it.
You know, the sad thing was she found herself and she knew that, you know, she wanted to help people. That's what she wanted to do. And then she dies. I mean, what a tragedy. Yeah.
It really is. So beyond writing about her in Princess Diana, the musical, what made you want to do that? Did you do that on your own, or is that a collaborative effort with other people who said, well, this is a great concept, why don't you run with it?
Well, you know, no, it just kind of evolved. When she died, you know, I was really devastated. So I stood at the piano when, you know, with all my emotions, and I wrote these songs about her, for her. I didn't know I was going to put them into a musical because, you know, I was too devastated at the time. So it was sometime later that I contacted this woman that writes with me, and I said, do you want to try it? So we tried it. I mean, it's evolved so much. You know, you never know when to end it. You know, we've changed it so many times, and you learn more about Diana, and, you know, it's never ending. But it's been around the country, and we have had good reactions to it.
That's amazing.
But,
forgive, there's a lot of noise around here. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you know, when I first did it, I felt kind of guilty, and I don't know why. So I had a dream about her where she said, go ahead with it. So that made me feel better. And then all the money that I raised, I gave to her charities for that show. So that made me feel better. I gave it, you know, to Nebraska AIDS and Nebraska Red Cross. So I felt good about that. She would have liked that.
That is fantastic.
So.
I'm sure she would. Got to forgive us. We have a tremendous amount of noise in the background. They're evidently digging up our parking lot here, and there's just no way to block it out. Well,
right.
So what interests you in music? Is it just where do the concepts germinate in your mind? Is it reading political stuff, or is it studies and reading? Your husband, your children, where does all that creativity come from?
Yeah, good idea. You know, I think more people could do this, could write songs, but they don't think they can do it, you know? But it really comes from events going on in the country. I have some political parodies that I recently put up on YouTube because, you know, the race for the presidency is so funny in a lot of ways. I mean, in a lot of ways it's not funny, but I try to look at the humorous side of both political parties, which there's a lot of humor there.
I didn't realize that. Maybe I'm too glum, and so I just missed all that humor. I'm going to have to listen to
right.
your videos, and maybe that'll turn me around. I'm not a sour guy. It's just like it's tough. I mean, how did you get beyond all that doom and gloom? And how did you find the parody there? That's amazing.
Well, you know, when Hillary and Bill ran against each other, I really have a funny video about that. It's gotten thousands of hits. Yeah, you know, that's a good one. But, well, you have to find the humor in everything. Otherwise, you're going to be crying every day, right?
Well, that's
you don't
want to
do
well,
that,
I don't,
right?
Well, I don't, but you know, I never thought of finding solace in politics. It is doom and gloom, and so I have to bring it down, try to make sense of it. But never thought of paradise it. But that's an interesting concept.
That's funny.
Maybe so. You're much more evolved than I am. You're much more evolved than I am.
No,
I've
not really.
Stuck in an old world. And when did you even consider going into using YouTube? Because I heard like one of your videos like 9 or 10 million viewers. That's called viral.
Yes.
I mean, I never met anybody
who
had a viral effort.
Well, it surprised me too. So you know, it's a song about the Octomom. And it's not even one of my favorite songs, but it's really cute, though, the video part of it with all her 8 babies. But the reason it went viral is in other countries, they revere women who have multiple births. I thought that's really it. So I have a lot of hits from other countries, you know, Russia, France, Germany. Really surprised me.
I had no idea
but
that
then,
really translated that way. That's a lot of babies.
Yeah, I
my
didn't
God.
Either.
I just don't know.
And, you know, they're
you
older now. And I have she has 14 kids. I have no idea how she does it.
That's,
who knows?
That takes a lot of management skills. Evidently, she learned it somehow. And God bless her for it.
Right.
Amazing.
Absolutely.
And so what are you? Oh, I forgot. You also do a radio show in Omaha. And how did you
well,
get involved
you know,
in that?
Yeah, truly, Hezzy. We finished the radio show. I did it for about 2.5 years. And I just wanted to see if I could do it. And I contacted this friend of mine who's really funny. I was kind of the straight man. And, you know, we interviewed 3 people every show. It was at once a week. We got some actors also.
Yeah.
But and musicians, and then I would play a couple of my songs on the show. That was fun. Well, you know, how'd you get involved? You've been on a long time.
Well, everybody told me they thought my writing was very good because I write in the newspaper, and they said, you've got to do this. And I knew a lot of people from different disciplines. And I celebrated them because I was always intrigued by what they knew and what I didn't know. And it was always a great rapport because one thing I learned in life is the simplest individual in the world has as much to offer as the most complex. And if you can appreciate that, if you can discern that, then there's much to learn. And I'm very appreciative that life has given me the opportunity to meet so many wonderful people. And It's almost like a one-way road when you write something. You don't always get a response, but radio allows you to interact. And so you get to know a little bit more. It becomes a little bit more intimate. And it's always a learning experience because there's so much I don't know, right?
Absolutely.
At least to me.
No, I love your philosophy. I really like that. That the simplest person in the world, you know, you can learn from him also. That's wonderful.
There's
really.
Always value to people. And so
I like that.
So are you focusing much of your work now on music? Is that your best modality of reaching out? And you also get a very quick response, don't you? You know,
well,
it,
on YouTube,
and,
I do.
Kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
I sell CDs. I recently became a grandmother, so of course I had to write baby songs.
Congratulations.
Yes,
okay.
Thanks. So I have this. I have a cute baby song CD, and that I actually I like to give that one away, but people are buying that one too. It's very cute, and
is that
goes along with.
That's pictured? Is that the one that you have pictured? Karen's grandchild? That your child?
Yes. Oh, actually, that one isn't
kid.
Because I have two of. Isn't that adorable? I couldn't put both of my grandsons on there, so I just picked somebody. You know, I went to iStock and got that photo. I love it.
Okay.
Isn't that adorable?
That is adorable. The eyes are so bright. And, they're sucking up all that knowledge. Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
Was breathtaking.
But the fun thing is, Hezzy, that my grandbabies, they're only like a year and a half old. They actually dance to my CD. It's so cute.
That is fantastic.
Pushy Splashy in the Bathy is one of them. They start dancing.
Well, you know, I hope you don't take this the wrong way because it's not meant in the wrong way. I'd learned years and years and years ago because there was at one time where I spent about a year actually milking cows. This was like in a former life, but when I was very young. So it was very interesting because I was on a farm, and I didn't live in a farm, but that was one of my responsibilities. So what was interesting is that we used to play music in the background, and especially so the cows always had that music, and they loved it. And actually, they produced more milk because of it, too.
Is so funny. Wow.
And then, but also interesting, music actually teaches kids mathematical concepts. Their mind is instructed by the music, and particularly classical music, and it gets translated almost in a subliminal way, but it really does help the kids a great deal. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
So that's a scientific
it's
background
funny
of
you
music.
Yeah, it's funny because I have a math CD also. It's funny that you say that, Hezzy. I have.
Really?
It's called I'm Mathorific. Yeah, I have a math CD, and
that's
a fun one. That's funny.
Well,
you must have known that somewhere.
I learned it from years ago, but I had no idea that I would meet somebody who knew that, which is great. So, and what made you go toward that route? Did you recognize that as well as part of acknowledgement somewhere in the scientific community that brought that up?
Well, you
know,
a lot of kids.
I didn't know what we were doing playing music for cows until years later. I think there was efficacy to it.
No, that's funny. I think a lot of young kids, maybe a lot of girls, think that they aren't good in math. I happen to be really good in math. I loved it. So I just wanted to offer, you know, some music as a helper to show that math is fun. You know, it can be really fun. So on YouTube, I have some animated videos along with my math songs, and they're a lot of fun. And it makes math, you know, math is fun. And, you know, the whole world is math, if you look at it that way. Shapes and numbers.
Oh, it is.
Whatever.
And so there's,
totally.
Does the music facilitate a young person's interest to go there? Is there something standoffish about numbers that a lot of girls have been almost weaned to avoid? And yet we're trying desperately to get more women involved in mathematics and in science. And I think as a society, we've dissuaded, probably more so in the United States than I've seen in Europe, but we've dissuaded women from getting into science and mathematics. And I never understood why.
I totally agree. Yeah. Where were you born, Hezzy, out of curiosity?
I was born in Israel. I was born in Israel.
Yeah, that's what
I'm
I thought.
20 some odd years. So, very interesting. Very interesting. And how did you arrive in all places in Omaha? Is your family from Omaha originally?
Yes. You know how that works. Yes, my grandparents immigrated here from. They immigrated from Russia and Poland, you know, around the turn of the century.
Okay.
And that's how I ended up here. I've been here most of my life. I went to school in college in Austin, Texas, but then I came home to be with family because family is everything, you know? Yeah.
It is.
And it's a wonderful community here in Omaha. People don't know that, which is why it's so wonderful. Because we're not overcrowded.
So that's the secret. Well, we're not going to, we better not share that that little nugget of information.
I know.
I hope nobody's listening. But so that's how you keep Omaha pristine. Is that why the population is so small in comparison to some of the other Midwestern states? Not really.
Because all they think, you know, the weather's bad, so don't come here. So that's fine if they think that. You know how it is in New York. It's about the same here weather-wise.
Weather-wise, I think,
but,
I don't know if people avoid New York because of the weather. I don't know. Maybe they run to it. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I think your traffic would drive me crazy. That's one good thing about Omaha. You know, trying to get places in New York City, it's not really easy, is it?
No, it's not. And and we don't have enough really good mass transit to compensate for not wanting to be on the road. And but we don't look like California in L.A., so I think that's a blessing in itself.
Yeah, well, you're right. And you walk a lot, right?
Yes, I do.
You walk a lot?
I do.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I do.
Right. You know, Hezzy, we had a Princess Diana show last March at the, Alvin Ailey Theater? Do you know Alvin Ailey?
Absolutely, yes.
Dance theater?
I've been there quite a few times.
Yeah.
The dance theater.
Oh, okay.
And it's a mostly a black troupe. Which is, I don't know how they came about, but there's something very unique about the physicality. And there's also a degree of the African-American look and experience somehow gets translated in dance. And many people don't realize that there is a difference, but it's a beautiful difference. So it's something to be celebrated, but they're very well respected in New York for sure, and I think way beyond.
Right.
So what brought
you have
to
a way with
Alvin
words. You are good. I'm sorry. What?
So what brought you to the Alvin Ailey Theater in New York?
Well, I worked with someone who found the theater so we could put on our show. And
he
found the Alvin Ailey Theater. It's beautiful. We loved it. It was like off Broadway.
Yes, it is. Yeah, but you know, off Broadway could be I don't know, even Oshkosh, Wisconsin. You know, it's in a very small area called Broadway, or it's somewhere else, and that's off Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And I never understood what was off Broadway. You know, I understood off-Broadway. It was like about a block or two away, but never off. I didn't know how far that extended. Maybe it extends to Canada, and I just don't know it.
Extends to everywhere else, right, in the country.
I guess.
Well,
there's that pecking order with New York. They seem to think they're at the top of the heap. I think somebody sang a song to that effect. But I don't know if that's true. We'll find out eventually.
Uh-huh.
So what are you working on now?
Well, you know, the political arena always, you know, excites me. I'll tell you what was funny, that there are 23 people running for the Democratic nomination.
Yes.
Now, I thought that was funny, Hezzy. So I wrote a song called Why Don't You Run for President? Because, like, every day it's like someone else is running for president. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I found humor in that. And there's a YouTube video on that. And, you know, I continue to write exercise songs and wedding songs, just wherever anything hits me going on in my life or in the country, that's good in the country. There's so much bad going on. So try
right.
to focus on the good. Sometimes that's difficult.
So how do people find you on YouTube, or how do people find where to get your music?
Well, you go to cdbaby.com, type in Javitch,
okay.
J-A-V-I-T-C-H.
Okay.
They can,
right.
you know, purchase things there. I'm on Spotify or iTunes. Or in YouTube, just type in my name also, and all these videos will come up. That's a wonderful thing, YouTube. You can do amazing things with it.
It does. When you just want to put in, do you put in Karen Sokolov Javitch or just Karen Javitch?
Either one. Well, actually, Karen Sokolov Javitch, but it's hard to spell Sokolov. So
okay.
if you just put in Javitch dash Princess Diana or just Javitch, you know, it'll come up.
Okay.
Eventually.
Oh, that's very, very good. I don't know, when I read Sokolov, it said, okay. You know, but I thought there was a lawyer who works for the president's administration, for President Trump's administration. I thought his name was Sokolov, but I think it isn't quite. But there's a similar name, but I don't remember
yes.
the exact name.
Not spelled
but
that
something
way.
Uh-huh. Similar to it. Yeah. So
right.
So
yeah.
Where does the original family come from in Poland? Because my father came from a place called Łódź, or they call it Łódź, actually, L-O-D-Z.
Oh, okay. Well, my grandmother came from Jedwabne. Do you
okay,
know that
I don't know
one?
Where
but
that
is. Yeah, and, you know, most of the Jewish people were murdered, actually, there.
Yes.
So, yeah. So I.
And that was
my,
in Poland or
my
in Russia?
Bubby, my. That was in Poland, and my bubby got
okay.
out of there, fortunately, with her sisters. So,
fantastic.
And Russia around Minsk. What about you? You have any
oh,
relatives
yeah.
in Russia?
No.
Yeah.
No, not there. It was my mother was from Berlin, and my father was from Łódź,
oh.
and they met in Israel. And that's where they
oh,
got married,
that's
and
wonderful.
That's where I was born.
Uh-huh.
That's how we got
uh-huh.
there.
Uh-huh.
So,
and what made you
yeah.
come to New York then? Why'd you come to New York?
Unfortunately, I only came to the United States because when I came here first time, it was 1957. So I was only 7 years old at the time. My father had discovered that he had two relatives that survived the war. And he didn't
uh-huh.
know that they did. And they lived in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So one was in Brooklyn and one was in Brooklyn. Oh, sorry. There was another one
mm-hmm.
in the Bronx and another one in Cleveland. So we visited them and then eventually we went back to Israel. And then Dad wanted to come here and be with his brothers, his sisters, because there were another seven
uh-huh.
children that never survived the war and certainly not the grandparents
oh,
or the aunts
yeah.
and uncles.
Uh-huh.
And, so that was the reason for him. And then we found my mother's sister who lived in the same building as my father's sister. And
Wow.
And when he got sick, I came over. And then when he got
mm-hmm.
better, I left. And then Mom got sick. And unfortunately, they both passed away. But so it's
mm-hmm.
and now the only relative I have
yeah.
left is really my brother. That's the closest relative, and of course I have a son, and that's it.
Aww.
So
how old's your son?
That's how it goes. Oh,
yeah.
Are you kidding?
And
now he's about 45. I'm not a spring chicken, that's for sure.
Yeah, me neither. But where is your brother then? New York or Israel or wherever?
No, he's in New York. He's in the Riverdale section of the Bronx. And
that's good.
It's a good place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's how it goes.
That's great.
My God, life is complicated, and yet it should be so simple, but I don't know. Well, maybe if I listen more to your music, I'll be better able to make light of it, and it won't be as depressing,
yeah.
Especially your comedic twist to it, which will be interesting. So you must be
thanks.
As well, huh? you must be good with
sure.
words. Okay.
Not as good as you. You're really good. You know, I couldn't write a book, but I can write songs because they're simpler to write, and I can rhyme. But you're extremely good with words, so I applaud
you
for
that.
That's
well,
why you're
you.
A radio host, you know.
Well, sometimes
yes,
I fuck it up. You know, it's like it's sometimes hard, especially with the noise from the garage where they're fixing up that whole thing. So it should be better in a couple of weeks. Well, I want to thank
uh-huh.
you for making the time. I hope that we'll have an opportunity to speak again. I wish you much success with your effort and with your children and your grandchildren. I think that it's the grandkids that will keep you young.
They absolutely.
Also make you
forget there's so
how
much
old
fun.
You are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Totally. You just become a little kid again, you know.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I don't know. It's good. It's good to be
you.
Able to grasp that again.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'll let you go. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you, Hezzy. Nice talking to you.
Be well. All
Bye-bye.
The best.
You
Bye.
Too. You too. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Well, there we have it, folks. We have an opportunity quickly to move on to find out what else is going on in our neck of the woods. And first, let's find out what they're doing at the Yonkers Tribune, and then we'll be back.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the Internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome, equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Welcome back. In case you do want to reach out to the Yonkers Tribune, you can reach them at a new number, 347-415-4326. So that number is the office number, the cell number, the text number, and the voicemail number. So you can reach us at one number, 347-415-4326. Now let's talk about the number one story. The number one story is that the bond market has sounded a recession alarm as China and Germany also show strain. Evidently, the United States, the United Kingdom, a yield curve, we'll talk about that in a moment, has inverted. Stocks are under pressure. Berlin cites a wake-up call. Well, it turns out that fears over a global economic downturn were intensified by disappointing data from China and Germany yesterday, sending bond yields tumbling to fresh lows and weighing on already jittery stock markets, underscoring rising concerns. Yields of the United States and United Kingdom 10-year government bonds dipped below those of shorter maturity debt for the first time since the financial crisis, an inversion of their normal relationship that has historically been a harbinger when it does reveal itself of recession. I think that the U.S. economy has enough strength to avoid a recession, but the odds have clearly risen, and they are higher than I'm frankly comfortable with, said Janet Yellen. She's the former Federal Reserve Chair, and that's what she told Fox Business, highlighting the flight to safety, quote-unquote, that has hit the markets lately. The 30-year U.S. Treasury bond dropped 12 basis points to 2.04%, its lowest level ever, while the United States stock market has shown a 2.4% drop by midday in New York. The FTSE All World Index, it's a Financial Times Stock Exchange All World Index that measures the health of global stock markets, fell 1.6%, and the universe of negative yielding bonds has swelled to over $15 trillion as investors brace themselves for more easing from central banks around the world. Investors' fears were compounded by poor Chinese data and news that the German economy shrank in the 3 months to June. Peter Altmaier, the economy minister, said the country could avoid a recession, but described the data as a, quote, wake-up call and warning signal, end quote, while Donald Trump's administration this week delayed some new tariffs on consumer goods that were set to take effect next month. Investors remain concerned that the escalating trade war is exacting a toll on the global economy. It's a dangerous game, said Dan Evason, the chief investment officer at PIMCO, the bond investment group. We think some economic damage is dealt every day that this uncertainty lingers. The U.S. yield curve inversion, and this is an explanation, when long-term bond yields are lower than short-term, was particularly unnerving to investors given the global importance of the biggest economy. A different part of the Treasury curve that compares three-month yields against 10-year yields had already inverted, but the shift in this area is the latest indication of growing unease in the fixed income market. Typically, longer-term debt trades with higher yields to compensate investors for the risk of holding debt for several years, during which time it is more difficult to predict economic conditions. When the yield curve flips, it is generally seen as a strong signal that investors are expecting an economic downturn. Quote, this is a warning sign from the global slowdown, said Andrea Iannelli, the investment director at Fidelity International. Quote, there is a lot priced in terms of bad news, but for now the momentum remains extremely strong, end quote. BlackRock, the world's biggest asset manager, said this week, quote, the recent escalation in U.S.-China tensions reinforces our view that trade and geopolitical frictions have become the key driver of the global economy and markets. Mike Riddle, a fund manager at the Allianz Global Investors, cautioned that the United Kingdom yield curve was a less reliable recession indicator than its U.S. counterpart. The United Kingdom curve spent almost half the 1990s inverted and things were fine, he said. But there is no question that a curve that is flattening or inverting is increasing the chance of recession. That's an important issue to understand and appreciate. So let's move on to some other breaking news stories, which are going to inform us one way or the other. Let's quickly look at that. First, we should look at just what's happening basically. Let me quickly first look what's happening in the Americas, and we're going to start off with what's happening in Canada. Canada's Trudeau has admitted to breaking federal ethics rules. It seems that, well, let me play the video for you. This comes from France 24. It's about 2 minutes in length. And bear with me.
More 80s chance of shower and thunderstorm Saturday night, then partly sunny and more humid near 90 on Sunday.
Okay.
The seatbelt area is uniforming for 1460 WNUX.
I didn't realize that that was in the background. Bear with me a moment. Okay, so I was listening and for a moment at the local station here in New Rochelle, but I forgot to turn it off, so it was in the background. So let's hear what's going on with regard to Canada's Trudeau.
An admission of guilt, but not an apology. On Wednesday, Justin Trudeau said he was acting in Canada's interests when he violated federal ethics rules.
The buck stops with the Prime Minister, and I assume responsibility for everything that happened in my office. But at the same time, I can't apologize for standing up for Canadian jobs, because that's part of what Canadians expect me to do.
Trudeau was on the defensive hours after the release of a report from Canada's Ethics Commissioner. The report says Trudeau broke a conflict of interest law when he pressured the former Justice Minister, Jody Wilson-Raybould, to halt the criminal prosecution of SNC-Lavalin. SNC-Lavalin is a Canadian engineering and construction company that's been rocked by scandal. In 2015, it was charged with fraud and corruption over allegations it paid millions of dollars to officials in Libya to win contracts there between 2001 and 2011. Trudeau got involved in the affair last year when he tried to convince the former justice minister to avoid taking the firm to trial, arguing such a case would hurt Canada's economic interests and result in job losses. Trudeau's links to the affair became public when former Justice Minister Raybould testified earlier this year, striking one of the current government's biggest scandals. Rival conservatives are hoping to seize the occasion.
The choice for Canadians has never been more clear. Between a prime minister who abuses his power, bends the law for his friends, and a conservative government led by a prime minister who will uphold the rule of law.
The new developments could hurt Trudeau's re-election bid in upcoming polls in October.
Well, that is what happened there. So let's move on with some other issues, of course. One second. Yes, this came out. This is in New York. Evidently, opera star Plácido Domingo is facing a probe over multiple sexual harassment claims. So it seems that opera great Plácido Domingo defended himself against multiple accusations of sexual harassment on Tuesday as the Los Angeles Opera opened a probe into the, quote, concerning allegations, end quote, and another group canceled one of his performances. In a report by the Associated Press, several women, one of whom was identified, accused Domingo of using his position as one of opera's most celebrated singers to pressure them into sexual relationships. Eight singers and a dancer told the agency they were sexually harassed in incidents going back to the 1980s. One said Domingo had put his hand down her skirt, while three said he had forcibly kissed them. Some said they felt their careers had been damaged by rejecting his advances. The allegations from these unnamed individuals, dating back as many as 30 years, are deeply troubling and, as presented, inaccurate, Domingo said in a statement sent to Agence France-Presse via his publicist. Still, it is painful to hear that I may have upset anyone or made them feel uncomfortable, no matter how long ago and despite my best intentions, he said. The Los Angeles Opera, the LA Opera, where Domingo has been director general since 2003, said in a statement it would engage outside counsel to investigate the concerning allegations. Plácido Domingo has been a dynamic creative force in the life of LA Opera and the artistic culture of Los Angeles for more than three decades, it added. Nevertheless, we are committed to doing everything we can to foster a professional and collaborative environment where all our employees and artists feel equally comfortable, valued, and respected. Spanish-born Domingo was one of the most recognized opera stars of the 20th century, starring in the three tenors alongside Luciano Pavarotti and José Carreras. In recent years, the longtime married singer has transformed himself into a baritone and still performs to packed audiences at the age of 78. I believe that all of my interactions and relationships were always welcomed and consensual. People who know me or who have worked with me know I am not someone who would intentionally harm, offend, or embarrass anyone, he said. However, I recognize that the rules and standards by which we are and should be measured against today are very different than they were in the past. Following the allegations, the Philadelphia Orchestra Association said it had withdrawn its invitation to Domingo to appear as part of its opening night concert on September 18th. We are committed to providing safe, supportive, respectful, and an appropriate environment for the orchestra and staff, for collaborating artists and composers, and for our audiences and communities, the orchestra said in a statement posted on Twitter. Domingo has made more than 100 albums and picked up 14 Grammy Awards. Earlier this year, he celebrated his 4,000th performance in a career that stretches back 60 years. Domingo has spent most of his later career in the United States as Director General of the Los Angeles Opera. The allegations are the latest in a series made against high-profile entertainment personalities as part of the, quote, hashtag MeToo movement against sexual misconduct. They have seen television icon Bill Cosby jailed, with movie mogul Harvey Weinstein awaiting the trial of his, or the start of his trial next month. So these are concerns for sure, and it has taken, unfortunately, too long a time, not for prosecution, but it's taking a very long time, unfortunately, for this sort of standard to come forward and to be revealed, which is very, very unsettling, if you must know, for everyone involved. And so it's just going to be a real problem. Now, there's something else that's going on here in the United States. New Trump rules have come forward that would deny the basis or deny visas on a basis of low income or use of public benefits. I think I actually read this to you a couple of days ago. Evidently, U.S. President Donald Trump's administration unveiled a sweeping rule on Monday that some experts say could cut legal immigration in half by denying visas and permanent residency to hundreds of thousands of people for being too poor. So the long-anticipated push or rule pushed by Trump's leading aide on immigration, Stephen Miller, takes effect on October 15th. It would reject applicants for temporary or permanent visas if they fail to meet high enough income standards or if they receive public assistance such as welfare, food stamps, public housing, or Medicaid. So I think we read this to you, certainly I think it was on Monday. So that's the story there. Now, let's quickly look and see what else is happening on the world stage. Let's first move on to what may be happening in the Asia-Pacific market. And this came also from the United States. Evidently, Trump says that if China wants a trade deal, it must first work humanely with Hong Kong. President Donald Trump suggested on Wednesday, that was yesterday, that trade talks with China can wait until tensions in Hong Kong have eased, tweeting, quote, "Of course China wants to make a deal. Let them work humanely with Hong Kong first," end quote, end quote. Trump also praised Chinese President Xi Jinping, calling him a great leader, and saying he could quickly resolve the unrest in Hong Kong if he wanted to. Quote, "I have zero doubt that if President Xi wants to quickly and humanely solve the Hong Kong problem, he can do it. Personal meeting," Trump tweeted. And Trump has previously said little about the protests in the semi-autonomous Chinese city, except to make it clear he believed that Hong Kong and China need to, quote, "deal with that themselves," end quote. He has urged the two sides to exercise caution and voiced hopes that the situation will be resolved peacefully. His more extensive comments on Wednesday came as U.S. stock markets tumbled, in part because of uncertainty over Trump's trade standoff with Beijing. Investors have also been rattled about the widespread protests in Hong Kong, and flights resumed at Hong Kong's airport after 2 days of disruptions that descended into clashes with police. While Trump has been reticent to take sides, some Republican and Democratic members of Congress have voiced their support for the protesters. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, for example, issued a statement last week saying that, quote, "dreams of freedom, justice, and democracy can never be extinguished by injustice and intimidation," end quote. The demonstrations are against what many Hong Kong residents see as an increasing erosion of the freedoms they were promised in 1997 when Communist Party ruled mainland China took over what had been a British colony. Trump said he knows Xi well and called him a great leader who very much has the respect of his people, end quote. Trump also voiced optimism about the off-again, on-again trade negotiations with China. Administration officials publicly and privately have voiced beliefs that a trade deal is still a ways off, even as the president voices frustration about the lack of progress. Unhappy with the pace of negotiations, Trump announced 2 weeks ago that the U.S. would apply 10% tariffs on about $300 billion in Chinese imports beginning September 1, but the administration moved on Tuesday to delay the tariffs on a wide range of Chinese-made products, including cell phones, laptop, computers, some toys, computer monitors, shoes and clothing, and it's removing other items from the list based on, quote, health, safety, national security, and other factors, end quote. Trump tweeted that delaying the tariffs would help China more than the United States. The American consumer is fine with or without a September date, but much good will come from the short deferral to December. So who knows? The way this is discussed, you just never can tell what's what. Okay, so let me just quickly look to see. Bear with me a moment here. I think that we've caught up with what happened in the Middle East, and that took place actually that we reported on. No new stuff has come in, and I wanted to check a little bit more about something else. yes, this is important with regard to India. India marked its Independence Day with its secular post-colonial image in tatters, unfortunately. India celebrates the anniversary of its independence from Britain today, but the pomp and splendor cannot mask the country's abuses in Kashmir and the shredding of its secular principles. Exactly 72 years ago, when the Union Jack was lowered from Delhi's Red Fort and replaced by the Indian saffron, white, and green tricolor, the world hailed the birth of a new nation that soon became a post-colonial beacon of secular democracy for countries emerging from the tyranny of colonialism. This year, India's Independence Day ceremony stuck to a template that has been followed for decades. Prime Minister Narendra Modi hoisted the flag at the Red Fort just as the country's first premier, Jawaharlal, I always had a problem with that first name, Jawaharlal Nehru, did on August 15 of 1947. It was followed by the Prime Minister's speech, delivered from the ramparts of the magnificent Mughal era fort, the singing of the national anthem, and a 21-cannon salute commemorating the country's freedom fighters. But while the du jour trappings of a secular democracy remain, India has emerged on many of its foundational precepts in the disputed region of Kashmir. For instance, New Delhi has effectively followed the methods and discourse of a colonizer. That's what Natasha Kaul noted, a novelist and associate professor in politics and international relations at the University of Westminster in the United Kingdom. There's a word for supposed development that comes from assumed moral superiority and economic irrationality in the shadow of the gun, with no input from the people affected and based on the fantasies of a foreign power. That India claims to be a post-colonial democracy does not change this fact. No colonial venture in contemporary times has dared name itself as such, wrote Kaul in a foreign policy column. While the country has birthed as a secular nation transcending religious identity, in contrast with the foundationally Muslim Pakistan, India today is a state as Hindu as Pakistan is Muslim. The vision of Hindu nationalists is the yin and yang to the Pakistani counterpart. which is unfortunate because India did not hold another model for democracy that was secular and a place for people of all other faiths, said Meera Kamdar, author of the book India in the 21st Century. So that was her issue. And last week, Modi's government crossed a Rubicon with the unilateral scrapping of Article 370, which guaranteed autonomy to Indian-administered Kashmir under the country's constitution. The gutting of Article 370 effectively whitewashed the murky circumstances under which the territory was acceded to the Dominion of India, and the subsequent United Nations resolution calling for a plebiscite in Kashmir that India has ignored. The ruling Bharatiya Janata Party, the BJP, has long threatened to move and made it a key promise for their 2019 re-election campaign. When it was finally abrogated on August 5 in a lightning strike that caught everyone by surprise, Modi's supporters called it a final solution without a hint of irony. The implementation, though, was far more sweeping than the BJP's campaign promise. In one fell swoop, India's only Muslim-majority state lost its statehood and was downgraded to a union territory administered by the central government in New Delhi. In his Independence Day speech on Thursday, Modi defended his government's controversial decisions on the erstwhile city of Jammu, Kashmir, and Ladakh. While some 4 million Kashmiris stayed indoors for the 11th day of an unprecedented lockdown, under extreme mobility restrictions and without access to the internet, mobile or landline phone services, Modi said the changes were aimed at economic development. The old arrangement in Jammu, Kashmir, and Ladakh encouraged corruption, nepotism, but there was injustice when it came to rights of women, children, Dalits, it's a sect, tribal communities, said Modi, referring to the low-caste Dalit community whose leaders have blasted the government's expropriation of their exploitation to justify the abrogation of Article 370. Well, while Modi waxed eloquent on the well-being and economic prosperity that would bring to Kashmir and the rest of India, Kashmiris were placed under an unprecedented lockdown with no access to the internet, mobile phones, or even landlines. Movement was restricted, a curfew was imposed, and tens of thousands of additional troops were deployed in one of the world's most militarized areas. Anyway, meanwhile, economists have been left to unpack the myth that the scrapping of Article 370 will economically benefit Kashmir, which has better demographic indicators than many other Indian states. Kashmiris long denied their right of self-determination, were not hailing their latest salvation, but the optics of repression failed to dent the Modi administration's triumphalist discourse. India, over the years, has steadily eroded Kashmir's autonomous status. This is the final step in the process, explains Sumit Ganguly, a distinguished professor of political science at Indiana University in Bloomington. This has been done with the vision of India as a homogeneous Hindu state with little or no use for secularism. The latest backlash by supporters of Hindutva, or Hindu nationalism, against critics of the decision is also consistent with the systematic stifling of dissent, experts say. India, as a post-colonial secular democracy, has been destroyed because part of what has happened is the way in which the constitution has been treated in a cavalier manner and how people who are objecting to this are being represented as anti-national or as Islamist or pro-Pakistan or pro-jihadist or whatever, said Kaul in an interview with Franz Van Kat. So while India was founded on Nehru's vision of a secularism designed to hold the subcontinent's disparate communities together, a strand of Hindu nationalism has long envisaged a majoritarian state that would dispense with multiculturalism. That strand was always present, said Kamdar, referring to Hindu nationalism. These were the people who assassinated Mahatma Gandhi, who opposed Nehru's vision and that of the father of the Indian Constitution, B.R. Ambedkar, and others. But now that second vision, which was once an undercurrent, has risen and is in the process of transforming a secular democracy into what other, into that other vision, which is a Hindu nationalist state where minorities live at the sufferance of the Hindu majority. On the eve of Independence Day, a court in the western state city of Rajasthan on Wednesday acquitted six men of the killing of a Muslim dairy farmer. Pehlu Khan's horrific 2017 lynching by a mob of cow vigilantes was caught on video, making national headlines. Cows are considered sacred by Hindus, and cow slaughters are banned in a number of Indian states, including Rajasthan. Since the BJP came to power in 2014, the phenomenon of vigilante squads lynching Muslim farmers who are accused of slaughtering cows without any proof has increased. Following the verdict, hashtag Pehlu Khan was India's top trending hashtag, with a number of Indians, including those from the diaspora, voicing their anguish. Quote, in spite of clear evidence, of video evidences, the killers of the hashtag Pehlu Khan have been acquitted. Kill Muslims in the name of cow will not take you to the jail, but will make your leaders in New India, tweeted Ashok Swain, a professor of peace and conflict research at Sweden's Uppsala University. So, very compelling news, that's for sure. But India will be in turmoil for quite a bit over this particular issue, which is very, very frightening for everyone concerned. And what a shame. One second here. All right. I think we've caught up with what's been happening in the Orient. And all right, so I think we've caught up with that as well. There's nothing new in on the financial front. Let's see what's going on elsewhere. Bear with me a moment. Let's see if we've got anything going on in Europe. Oh, yes, this is the most important probably. Gibraltar has allowed the Iranian tanker Grace One to leave, despite the U.S. detention request. Well, it seems that a newspaper in Gibraltar says authorities have allowed an Iranian supertanker at the center of a standoff with Tehran to leave, ignoring U.S. requests to keep it detained. Washington had sought to seize the ship through legal action. Authorities in Gibraltar have released the Iranian supertanker Grace One, which was seized on July 4 on suspicion it was shipping 2.1 million barrels of crude oil to Syria in breach of European Union sanctions, local newspaper Gibraltar Chronicle had said. The Supreme Court in Gibraltar was ready to order the release of the vessel, but it delayed the decision after the United States Department of Justice made a last-minute application to extend the vessel's detention. The Gibraltar government said earlier on Thursday that Gibraltar is a British, Gibraltar is a British overseas territory linked by a narrow stretch of land to southern Spain. But the Chief Justice of Gibraltar Supreme Court, Anthony Dudley, so there was no U.S. application before the court when the hearing resumed on Thursday afternoon. On that basis, Gibraltar's Chief Minister, Fabian Picado, has decided to lift the detention order and allow the ship to sail, end quote, the newspaper said on Twitter. British territory says it has written assurance from Iran that the oil from Grace One will not go to an EU-sanctioned destination. So that's, you know, that's what's going on there. Bear with me a moment. I think we've covered all our bases for today. Bear with me one moment. I think we're
One second. Let me just check about this one issue that came up today. Evidently, Italy's Salvini has been overruled as six European Union countries are welcoming migrants aboard rescue ships. It seems that Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte said on Thursday that six European Union countries had agreed to take in some 150 migrants who have been blocked from docking in Italy, resolving the latest standoff of over immigration to Europe across the Mediterranean. The migrants have been stranded on the Spanish charity ship Open Arms since it picked them up off Libya in early August, and Rome's far-right interior minister, Matteo Salvini, refused to allow them to depart or disembark. France, Germany, Romania, Portugal, Spain, and Luxembourg have said or have told me that they are ready to welcome the migrants, Conte said in an open letter addressed to the far-right interior minister, Matteo Salvini. So that's the story there. Let me quickly look at one last thing. I want to make sure that we have this in place. Tomorrow's Friday. Okay, we're going to speak to Mayor Victoria Garrity. She'll be on at 10 o'clock. I can't wait to talk to her and also wish her a happy birthday. I think her birthday was yesterday or I think it was yesterday on Wednesday. So I was able to post something to wish her a happy birthday, and I guess that's about it. So we'll be writing that up shortly, and I want to thank you just for being with us today. And let me just see. I think we're cool. And let me just do this here. Okay, I think we can say goodbye, and thank you for being with us today, that's for sure. So goodbye. Here we are.